Good afternoon. It's time for the Dynamic Health Show here on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. That's CFRO. My name is Allart. And today, you know, well, have you ever wondered about the effects of worry? I mean, there's so much to worry about in the world. We've got environmental destruction, species destruction, all kinds of things going on in our world. Everywhere you turn left or right, there's something to worry about. But what about the effects of all that worrying on us? How is that helping anything? Today I'm going to interview Dr. Beverly Potter, who wrote a book called The Worrywart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. Dr. Beverly Potter earned her doctorate in counseling psychology from Stanford University and her master's of science in vocational rehabilitation counseling from San Francisco State. She's a psychologist specializing in career and workplace issues, including overcoming job burnout, managing and leading yourself. I love this, maverick career strategies. And it's interesting, this one follows mediating disputes. Maverick career strategies followed by mediating disputes. Setting high performance goals, managing like a coach, managing stress and training development. Doc Potter, as she's known, her recipe is a blend of humanistic psychology and Eastern mysticism, and she throws into the mix some principles of behavior mod psychology. She was a member of the Stanford University Staff Development Program for 20 years and provided seminars and training for a wide variety of corporations, governmental agencies, and associations. Thanks for joining me on the program today, Beverly.
I'm delighted to be there. Be here.
Be here.
Anywhere. Maybe a parallel universe.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking for one to escape into these days.
Are you worried?
Well, there is definitely plenty to worry about down here in the States, I guess they say, up there in Canada.
So what are you worried about?
Oh, well, let's not get into my long list of... Let's talk about how to deal with worry and worry smart.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, is there such a thing as positive worry or valid, justifiable worry, or is it all negative?
No. Worry, yes. The answer is yes, and that's what I'm talking about, worrying smart. Worry is absolutely good when it's done in a helpful manner. We need to worry. Worry is a mental fire drill. It's the way we identify potential hazards, come up with plans and methods for dealing with those or avoiding them. So we don't want to be some kind of Pollyanna going around. The problem is that worry, once we start worrying, we get stuck in it. And there's ways of worrying that are not at all helpful, that can be harmful and make us miserable, and that's called worry warding. And lots of people do it. They're not crazy. They're not neurotic or sick. They just, you see, worry is thinking, talking to yourself inside your head. It's actually a kind of behavior. It's an internal behavior, and worry warding is a bad habit that people have picked up, and it can be corrected. But correcting a habit, just like any other habit, is not easy.
No,
but it's doable.
That's true. Now, I wanted to this word worry wart. Do you know where that came from? Worry wart.
I've heard different stories. The main one that I've heard is that it's an old English phrase: a dog worries a bone. And if you've ever had a dog and gave it a bone, I mean, there it will sit for hours. You can't distract it from that bone as it grinds away at it, and you see what's left of it when the dog is done. And basically it means like getting so fixated on the thing, obsessing. What worry warts do is they get into rut thinking. They think the same thing over and over repetitively. It's not a helpful thought. It's a thought that they're scaring themselves with. And it generates tremendous anxiety and gets worse and worse. Worry warts think in a manner where they catastrophize and see the worst case scenario. And when you, whatever you are thinking about in your mind, the body just takes as real. So when you start picturing some horrific situation that you're worrying about, the good old body just acts like that's real and mobilizes. All the juices get flowing, the adrenaline and everything like that, and mobilizes. This is not healthy, and the person is keyed up and can't stop doing it. Worry warts just constantly analyze everything. They're constantly vigilant. Worry warts tend to be perfectionists, and as we all know, nothing and nobody can be perfect. So there's always some flaw.
Oh, nuts.
You thought you could be perfect? There's always some little flaw, and that's what the worry wart focuses on and blows it way out of proportion. And by the way, there's a profession that's a professional worry wart. Do you know what it is?
Mother?
Well, let's put that up there, too, okay? But the professional worry wart is your local attorney.
Oh.
Have you ever noticed how an attorney can take a situation? I mean, this is their job, is to look at your situation, find where you're vulnerable, mm-hmm. and help you cover that vulnerability. But once they... my brother was an attorney. He used to be a human being. Oh, excuse me, I didn't say that. Only it's true. Anyway, but they get focused on it, and then they blow it up into this huge, terrible thing, you see?
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting that worry warts are, I mean, our attorneys are literally our worry wart. If we could just carry one around with us and go, well, here, worry about this, and you can worry about how I'm going to pay my bills next week, too, you know? Anyway, perfectionism, which is really a serious situation, it's a thinking habit, makes a lot of people miserable, and that's the problem. What we need to do is to learn not to stop worrying, and you cannot tell somebody to stop worrying. They will cling to that worry, they will worry more. And people believe that the worry helps. In fact, worry... The dynamic of worry is addictive. It's self-reinforcing. For example, let's just take another addiction, drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the alcohol itself is addictive, but putting that aside, what happens? A person feels a little anxious, so they take a drink. The drink makes them feel a little relaxed, and that is reinforcing. It's called negative reinforcement. That's not punishment. Negative reinforcement is something that you win by taking away something bad, like when you see a cop and slow down and don't get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You learn to slow down every time you see a cop, right?
Right.
So anything that removes a negative, we're likely to do again. Well, worry wart is this vicious cycle where we are anxious, engage in worry, thinking it through momentarily. We feel slightly relieved, and that is reinforcing in a negative way by taking away this negative. In fact, there's a story that I love. It's about the two women. The one woman is waving her arms around, and the other woman sees her and says, you know, what are you doing waving your arms around? And the first woman says, well, I'm keeping the tigers away. The second one says, there's no tigers around here. First one says, you see,
yeah,
it works.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
And that's, you see, it literally can be an addiction because here's the fear, wave your arms, you feel a little better, and that's reinforcing. So the next time you get that feeling, you wave your arms again.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of the dynamic that goes on here. And this is what we don't want to stop worrying. We want to worry in a way that is productive, get something done, and then the problem is the person, you're keyed up, you're anxious, you need to realize, I've been doing this work of worry, I'm anxious now, I've got to do something to soothe myself. So what are some of the things that we can do that are more productive worrying rather than worry warning? Well, one of them is we have to, first of all, learn how we worry. Everybody worries in a different way. Everybody has some different little thing that sets them off. So the first step is don't try to stop worrying. Catch yourself worrying and then kind of like a scientist, step back and watch yourself doing it. Oh, yeah, I was thinking that. You'll never get ahead, I heard myself saying. Yep, there I go. Yep, that's how I start it, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so we start to get a picture, an understanding. I mean, let's just say that was in a simple-minded mode, that was the entire dynamic. If you knew that your worry warning started by the thought, I'll never get ahead, you can already have developed some kind of plan for dealing with that.
So to neutralize that thought.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you see, now here's the way the mind is extremely complicated, way more complicated than that computer on your desk.
Well, some people's
time,
maybe, I don't know.
It's very, very simple in the fact that we can only think one thing at a time. Thinking is a behavior, and standing is a behavior. We can either stand or sit. We cannot be standing and sitting simultaneously. It's like that with thinking. We can only think one thing at a time. So what the trick is neutralizing, but neutralizing suggests a vacuum. There is no vacuum, as we know. Mm-hmm. If you try to just say, stop worrying, well, maybe you could stop for a second, but guess what? The worry is going to race back in there. So the trick is, in many cases, is to crowd the worry out with some other thinking. Fill that mind with some other thoughts deliberately, especially in the beginning, and you kind of have to take yourself in hand because this worrying is, you know, it has a hold on us. And we crowd that worry out with other kinds of thinking. But the first step then is to learn how we personally do it. And another one is then to talk to yourself as a good friend would. I like to have the little picture in my mind of the devil on one. You remember that thing, the devil on one shoulder trying to get us to be sinners and the little angel on the other?
Yeah.
Well, I have on the one shoulder the fuddy-duddy, FUD. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Okay.
So, you know, when you talk like a fuddy-duddy, you trigger fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, was my slip showing? Oh, my God, did I turn off the stove? Oh, what are they thinking? Oh, I saw them laugh, talking about me. See, that's fuddy-duddy.
Okay.
Whispering in our ear all the time. No. On the other shoulder is the good friend. Now, good friends don't talk to us like that. And if they do, they're not a good friend. Get rid of that person. Okay?
Right.
So a good friend is usually, we can always be just so objective with somebody else's situation, can't we?
Right.
So the good friend, and maybe you have somebody who's a good friend, like Sally or somebody. So you can even say to yourself, wait a minute, catch yourself worrying, wait a minute, what would Sally say to me right now? Well, Sally would say, you know, you're going a little bit to extremes, or these bad things almost never happen, or how would you like to go to a movie, or many different things that the good friend says. So you say to yourself what Sally would say to you, and for a moment, because that's crowding out that worry, it works, but then the worry creeps back in because the mind is like a wild elephant.
Sure.
And how do you tame? You're now an elephant hunter, okay?
Well,
you don't whip the elephant. You don't give the elephant a lecture. You know, tell it's bad. No, they tame an elephant by capturing it, and they put a big cuff on its leg to a chain. The elephant doesn't like that. It flaps its ears. It roars. It tears off. And then what you got to do is you got to grab that chain, pull it back. Elephant takes off, grab the chain, pull it back, takes off, pull it back, takes off. This is how they tame the elephant. Eventually, that elephant finally understands who the boss is. You're the boss, not the elephant. Then you can get on the elephant and ride it. Look how powerful you are. Well, this is like the mind, this wild elephant mind we've got. So you say to yourself, hey, what would Sally say? And even thinking that is crowding the worry out. And you start saying what Sally would say, and then that old wild mind just takes off again. So you don't whip yourself or tell yourself how you'll never be able to succeed or, you know, what a jerk you are or whatever the routine is. No, you just pull that line back and say, wait a minute, what would Sally say now?
Yeah.
This takes a while. Breaking a bad habit takes time.
Yeah, and you're lucky if you only have two voices, you know,
the
devil on one and the angel. I got a committee going on here, you know.
Yes, well, then that is even more challenging, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And you could give those that committee names, you know, the good friend, the fuddy-duddy.
Yes.
I don't know who the rest of them are.
That's
but,
true.
Another thing is to, you see, worry warts get into rut thinking, inflexible thinking. And not only that, they tell themselves this pile of, you know what, I won't say that word, and baloney, a God. Pile of baloney, okay? They tell themselves, we tell themselves, I do this, and it's just ridiculous, you know, whatever this stuff is. And you know what, when you're listening to this stuff going on in your own head that you're telling yourself, it sounds so reasonable and logical, doesn't it? It could be the most ridiculous, extreme, irrational pile, but it's brainwashing. And we believe it.
Mm-hmm.
See? So flexible thinking. Now, there's 6 steps of flexible thinking. And people who like to write journals, they could write these down. Or you could even have a little card, you know, you carry around in your pocket or your purse or something. And the 6 steps. The first one, instead of saying, oh, no, all this stuff, you go, wait a minute. What are the facts of this situation? The facts, ma'am. Nothing but the facts. Remember that guy?
Yeah, just the facts. Yep.
Okay, you write down the facts. Then you say, how do I feel about these facts? And you start exploring how you feel about those things. Then you say, what's working here? What next step? What's possible? Like brainstorming all the possibilities. Then the next step, what's wrong or what could go wrong? And then the final one is, well, what's the next step now? See, so that's more flexible thinking, whereas the worry wart just gets stuck in this rut, and we all do it. It's just who does it more? Where you go, da 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 da. You finally get to the end of the scenario, bing, start over again. Da 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 da. Bing, da 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 da. You know, now it's like 4:30 in the morning. Da 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 da. Bing, da 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 da. It's the endless loop.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, when I got some great music on the radio, I don't want it to turn off at the end. I want it to loop. I'm tired of going and turning it on again and again. But in my mind, I don't like this.
Yes.
But I can't. You know, it takes hold of us.
Yeah.
See, and that's called rut thinking. And that's part of what we need to break out of, because it's not helpful. It just scares us to death, these absurd things that we tell ourselves in our mind. And one of the things that worry warts do, well, wait a minute, let's get to, okay, you can challenge the worry. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? You start, you know, you get one of those. You got that committee?
Yeah.
Well, give them each a job. All right? Well, you're this and you're that. Okay, your job is to challenge.
Right.
Every dumb thing and ridiculous thing I say, I want you to challenge it.
Okay.
And a variation on challenging it, and challenging things are, well, you know, what's the evidence for this? Like, give me a break, you know, or what is another way I could look at this? That's the type of thing is a challenge. Another one, one of your other committee members, you tell them, okay, your job is to give me permission, okay? Because worry warts are really hard on themselves, whipping themselves, too. And perfectionists are just the worst as far as self-whipping goes.
Mm-hmm.
So the permissive, you start lightening up, you know, like lighten up. And permissive statements, that's number 2 of your committee, can say things like, you know, everyone makes mistakes, or you can say no, or you know what, so you made a mistake, you learn. How else do you think you're going to learn? This type of thing. So after you go through challenging, of course, there's looking for solutions. That's really one of the hardest things for worry warts, because they're convinced that they're helpless and everything is out of control. One of the things the worry warts do is, Wait, let's get to this one. And this one's kind of tricky, too. Set the worry aside. Now, you know, that's really tough. Really?
That's like letting go of the sides of the pool, you know, right?
Set it on the side of the pool. That's a nice way. See, if you can come up with a metaphor or a picture in your mind that you can use like that, it can be very helpful. Alan Watts, who was a great mystic back in the 60s, I hate to admit I was alive then. Please don't start counting the decades. Anyway, that gives me something else to worry about. All right. Alan Watts used to talk about the mirror, all right? All right, you stand in front of a mirror. The mirror reflects you. That's what a mirror does. You step away. The mirror lets you go. And all these mystics say attachment is the root of all suffering. Well, what we do is, see, the mirror, when you step away, the mirror doesn't keep reflecting you. It doesn't say, you know, I'm going to keep reflecting you because it isn't fair that you stepped away. And I don't care if you stepped away because I'm going to reflect you anyway and I'm going to hold on to you. Okay?
Right.
That's where we get into suffering. See? Because we keep holding on to things instead of letting them go. Well, so easy to say, so hard to do.
Right.
So there's a little Zen story, and I'm just so sick and tired of the wise man. So I change all these Zen stories into the shaman woman and the seeker.
Okay.
The seeker used to be my husband. We used to do these sort of like role plays. Unfortunately, he died, so he's the seeker in heaven. Anyway, the shaman woman and the seeker. They were walking along the muddy road, and they were meditating, so they were not talking. And they came to this really strange-looking man who had on these fancy silk shoes, and he called to them, and because his little dog... I used to have a dog named Little Dog. I stick everything like that in these stories. The little dog was across the street, and the man said, oh, couldn't you help me, shaman woman? I can't step in that mud because my fancy shoes and my dog is over there, and it can't hear me, and I can't get my little dog. So the shaman woman didn't say a word. She just walked over there, picked up that little dog, carried it back to the man, set it down in front of him, and proceeded to walk with the seeker, not talking for the rest of the day. They finally got to their destination, and now they were could talk again, and the seeker went, shaman woman, just like, what is wrong with you? Don't you know that strange men on the street are, I mean, that guy looked really weird. Yeah, I mean, he might have been a robber. He might have been a rapist. I mean, who knows? And that dog, it could have bitten you. It could have had rabies. I mean, right? All day, the seeker had been doing this. And the shaman woman looks at him and says, I left that dog on the side of the road. Are you still carrying it?
Yes.
Well, this is what we do, you see. We carry this stuff with us needlessly. And this is why often people refer to dogs. You know, dog is my co-pilot type stuff. We're always talking about how dogs just roll with things and how dogs are so accepting and whatnot. Actually, I'm convinced with my dog that she can think.
In fact, and she thinks just like you?
Well, not just like me. Although I'm starting a new experiment. I'm trying to see if my dog can lip read. No, I kid you not. I started this yesterday. I discovered that if I just mouthed Cookie, she jumped up and her ears perked up. Okay. So I thought, well, this is kind of clever. What if I'm ever in a dangerous situation and I can't talk on my dog? I want her to lip read. Okay, that's a sidetrack.
Okay.
But what does the dog do? Well, we can only hypothesize what goes on in the dog's head. They're obviously, you know, God spelled backwards. But what does the dog do? Well, you yell at it this minute, and it's cringing in the corner and quivering and going, oh, my God, my human hates me. And then, you know, a few minutes later, it's happy. Why? It's probably not sitting there going, why is my human at It lets it go, see? This is our problem. We're so sophisticated, but we can't turn this stupid wild mind off. So this letting it go business, this is where relaxation comes in. And there's all these different kinds of techniques to relax. And this is where prayer, it turns out that prayer is just, I don't know exactly why we could do psychological experiments, but the fact is prayer helps people.
I don't know if we should trust you with psychological experiments. You think your dog can lip read.
That's only part of what she can do. No.
Oh.
What happens when somebody prays? These words are going on in their head, and they're crowding the worry out. And not only that, the words are soothing, and the words are that generates hope instead of fear. Western prayer is one kind of prayer. Eastern prayer, which they call meditation or this sort of thing, those kinds of meditations are often chanting or your mantra. And what is that? Saying something repetitively over and over. once again, it's crowding that work, those words out. The rosary, or the worry beads, mm-hmm. which kind of look like a rosary. What do you do with the rosary? You hold. I mean, I'm not Catholic. I never did it, but I'm seen people do it. They hold on to the bead and they say Hail Mary, full of grace. However it works. Then they go to the next bead, Hail Mary, and they go through this, through the whole thing, see? And their fingers are doing something, and their mind is crowding that out. Same thing as the worry bead. You hold the worry bead, and you say your mantra, or you count it, or whatever the method is. Or other ways to relax yourself. Now, myself, probably you didn't pick this up, but I'm like a high-energy person.
You. Oh.
You don't believe me?
No.
you know, I race around, you know. The minute I wake up, I'm leaping out of bed and zooming. And so, yes, I can sit down and do meditation and mantras.
So are you sitting still while we're talking? Are you pacing around the room?
Well, I often do pace around, but then I get to be panting, and you think it's my dog instead of me. So I'm actually sitting right now.
Oh, okay. You must be driving
me nuts.
I could
get up and pace any minute.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things I do, we all have to have our own method. People should practice different methods and then use what works for you.
Now, hold on a second. I just got to do station ID.
Okay.
You're listening to CFRO 102.7 FM, Vancouver's Co-op Radio. The program you're listening to is Dynamic Health. This is Allard. I'm speaking with Dr. Beverly Potter about her book, The Worry Wart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. Okay, Beverly, I know that you're chomping at the bit, so.
I said I was a dog, not a horse.
Sorry. My mistake.
No, horses, according to my brother, who's a great horseman, they think.
The one that doesn't have a life? That brother?
No, I didn't say he didn't have a life. I said he used to be
a human being. Okay, isn't that the same thing?
Before he became an attorney.
Okay.
And then he became, I won't say what he became. But so. Anyway, I have a very bad back. Fortunately for me, I discovered after years of pain and chiropractic and this and that, I discovered that hot water does it for me. And I have to do hot tub duty. Otherwise, I'm not walking and I'm in pain and in misery. It's so extreme. I have, for the last 15 years, my hot tub in my living room. I sit there in my living room. I find it very civilized. You know those Romans, you know, with the peeled grapes?
Uh-huh.
And the orgies next to the tubs.
Uh-huh.
Number one, that water was not cold.
No.
And number two, it wasn't outside.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I find it very civilized. At any rate, the point is, I'm getting up to pace now. The point is that what I do, and I'm convinced this is the secret of my youth and my health, is that I put my body, my racing body, into that warm water. And the warm water does its number on my muscles, whether I want it to or not. And so I put my body in that warm water, and the muscles start relaxing. And as the muscles relaxing, the mind begins to relax. So there are many methods. I like that method. There's also taking a deep breath. When we get to worrying and freaking, we start to hyperventilate. If we just did that, we could do exercise. I could say to everybody, okay, now, and get you for a minute, just 1 minute, to hyperventilate. Your anxiety level would be up.
Right.
Okay, this is just a matter of how to operate this biochemical robot that we woke up one day occupying.
That's true. Sometimes we hold our breath, too.
Yes, that'll do it, too. Yes. We're not even aware that we're holding our breath, you see. Taking a deep breath, and then what they do is they go, okay, breathe in deep, and the diaphragm, and most people don't even know how to get that air all the way down there, and this counting while breathing, taking a deep breath, and count, it's hard to take a deep breath and to count and talk, too, but take the deep breath, and you go, and one, and two, this type of thing, and now for four, exhale, and then counting. Once again, it's crowding out. Well, hey, you can take a deep breath while driving the car, while sitting in the meeting, while somebody's saying something that you really are getting very annoyed about, stand on hold or whatever, you're always capable, as long as you're living, of taking those deep breaths. And that, for whatever reason, brings the body down, or this hyper down. Okay?
Yeah.
And so that's part of working on leaving it, letting it go.
Yeah.
Just letting it go. Okay?
Now, I see you got something here. It says, eat a sweet. And I go, no. Just because I think of sugar, it just jangs you up. And then when it goes, you crash. You know?
It depends on how much sugar. A lot of things are paradoxical, you know. Like this latest thing, they've got the something or other paradox, the French paradox.
No, don't know it.
Well, that's the French, you know, are famous for lots of sauces and wine.
Uh-huh.
They love wine. So the French paradox is that for some reason, a little bit of wine, now it's been expanded to alcohol, a little bit of wine or alcohol is actually good for our heart, even though we're eating all of that bad food. But a lot of wine is not so good. So a little bit. And what happens, let me tell you a story about my husband who was born in the Middle East. He was born in Bethlehem. And so he had an unusual life. And somewhere along the line, he or his sister was bitten by a chimpanzee. And his mother took his sister to the hospital, and she was nearly hysterical over this. And the nurse came out and handed her a glass of sugar water and said, here, drink this. And a little bit of sweet will calm you down to get too much. And see, it gets it to be an addiction. A little bit of alcohol, but remember I told you before, you drink the alcohol, you mellow out a little bit, so you drink a little more, mellow, next you know you're hooked.
Well, and it's the same thing with sugar. I eat sugar, I want sugar.
Exactly.
So better not to eat it.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's just one of the many methods. I of course look at sugar as sin.
Okay. So you're being paradoxical here.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this thing that says eat a sweet, and you're telling me it's a sin. So
no. For me, it's my sin. Okay. I avoid sugar. When I was a child, I was a major sugar junkie. I rotted most of the teeth out of my mouth with sugar in high school. I still have my front teeth. You can't see it. You know what I mean? Somehow I managed to break out of that, okay? But I was just really hooked. I lived on sugar. I ate candy bars for lunch. It was ridiculous. Thank God I got out of that, okay? But that doesn't mean that you should use that method. That's just one method.
All right.
Okay. Another method, which you might think that I kind of like, is laugh at it.
Is what?
Laugh.
Oh, laugh. Yes.
Make a joke. Make a joke about the problem.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, number one, while you're making the joke, you're saying you're not talking about the problem, you're making the joke. So we're crowding it out again, okay?
I can just see that one of those committee members getting really uptight about being laughed at.
Oh, I see. You want it to laugh at the committee member.
Well, if you're laughing about the worry, and the worry is one of the committee members is going, well, you should worry about this, and you really ought to focus on this.
Oh, I can see you're really good at this. You're already going, already. Okay. Well, one of the other committee members isn't laughing at the one.
Yeah, but
it's
the worry is
laughing. It's making what they're doing amusing.
Yeah, but the worrier is going to say, you're laughing at me. How dare you laugh at me? And if I'm thinking that, then I'm, you know, you're laughing at what I'm thinking about. Well, then you're laughing at me. You know?
Yes. Well, maybe you shouldn't use that technique then. Instead of doing that, what you can do is watch some comedy movies.
Yes.
Okay. Instead of a horror movie,
uh-huh.
where you're sitting there on the edge of your seat, you know, about ready to jump out of your skin. Right, Norman Cousins showed that watching comedy movies actually beefed up the immune system.
Yeah.
It also gets us to laugh. And just like we can't stand and we can't sit simultaneously, you know, laughing actually dispels anxiety. So that might be a method for some people. With your committee, we don't know.
That's true.
Okay?
But hey, you know what? I wonder if horror movies relax psychopaths.
Well, that's an interesting notion. I can see that you're really getting into some convoluted thinking here. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, are psychopaths into horror? Psychopaths just, they say, I don't want to claim to be one, although I'm convinced I knew a few, have no conscience, mm-hmm. and are extraordinarily manipulative. Psychopaths can read you instantly and come up with what you want to hear and deliver it in such a way that you totally believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't bother them all at all to drop you like a hot potato 2 seconds later and laugh at you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I don't know if they'd like horror movies. Unless you're thinking of, the serial murderer.
Right.
Now, they may like it. You know, who knows? Some of these things, well, I could go on about that. But let's go to avoiding coffee.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Okay. That's another thing. I used to be a major coffee junkie. I used to go to the Stanford Coffee House, community coffee house. I used to call it the clinic. I would show up.
Fix, right? Okay.
I think I was I did everything before other people did. I used to take all my work and lay it out and set up and possess the table and do everything in the coffee house. While I consumed coffee, and by the way, once again, I forbid you to count any years, but this excellent coffee was 10 cents a refill.
You're ancient.
Now they just built a Pete's coffee. Everybody around here looks down their nose at Starbucks, but Pete's, I don't know if you have it up there, but it started in the Bay Area, and it is like, the elite coffee.
Okay.
And they built this incredible coffee house across the street from this little apartment building I have, which I'm thrilled. I use it in my ads to hook people to renting. They built this huge, living room in there with these big leather chairs. They solicit people to sit in there all day with their laptops,
mm-hmm.
pouring down that coffee.
Yep.
Now, the problem with this is that as I used to do, mindlessly stimulating my body to the point where I was overstimulating. It's another one of these paradoxes. If you do it too much, the body kind of collapses into sleep.
Well, it's kinda
I used
like
to
beating,
sit in bed and drink a cup of coffee before I went to bed sleep.
It's I've got another image for you on that one. It's like beating the slaves into making them work, and eventually they just drop.
Yes. Well, that's or else they go berserk and rebel and kill you.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, beating is, see, now this is another thing, and we tend to beat ourselves, okay? People in their heads will talk to themselves in ways that they would never tolerate anybody else talking to them. And a lot of it could be categorized as beating themselves, right?
Yep.
Some people beat themselves into performance. Some people, that's the way they get things done. Procrastinate, procrastinate, procrastinate. We learned this in college, all right? Did you procrastinate studying in college? Yes. Maybe you were. Actually, I was so terrified that I was going to be thrown out in 5 seconds. I didn't procrastinate. I did the opposite. I read the book, and then I underlined it, and then I copied the underlining into a notebook, and then I studied the underlining because I was in such a state of panic. And in fact, when I got out of high school,
it was all that coffee and sugar you were consuming.
Coffee, sugar, panic. Yeah, that was it. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So the coffee, people just don't even realize. Every conference you go to, there's that overboiled, disgusting coffee in the back of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the bottles of sugar, Coke, and stuff. That's what they're putting down us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we mindlessly are just pouring this down our throats because we're like unconscious. We don't know how to run this machine, this incredible biochemical robot that we're riding around in. Actually, I want to leave mine on the side of the road. I want to go get another a 27-year-old one.
Uh-huh.
I keep looking for it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what happens is, see, that coffee, in the back of your mind, you could think of the mind as being an emotional mind and a rational mind. The rational mind is kind of overlaid this wild emotional mind, and the rational mind thinks and, you know, sounds just very together and logical. But way back in there somewhere is this like little eye. It's watching to make sure that we are safe, because we don't have big long claws or big teeth, and we don't have thick fur like a grizzly bear. We don't have jackrabbit legs to spring away. The human body is pretty vulnerable. So we got this little eye watching all the time. Am I okay? Am I okay? Is everything safe? Is there danger? It's watching every second, even when you're asleep. So here's my story about that. I go to a dinner with my husband at friends. We come out, and, you know, it's late. I'm not paying a lot of attention. It's dark. Parked on the side of the road. I guess there was a tree above there. I didn't notice. I walk up to the car, you know, like half unconscious. I mean, who's paying attention, you know? You walk out, get in the car. I start to lean into to open the door, and I lean in, and all of a sudden in this dim light, it's as if, you know, I'm two people. I'm flinging myself back. I mean, major, like somebody socked me, flinging myself back, screaming. And as I'm kind of flying through the air screaming, the rational brain kicks in and suddenly realizes what happened. What happened was, I'm getting goosebumps now, what happened was this large, almost 3 inches long garden spider had made a web. I'm really getting goosebumps. And it was hanging there, and as I leaned in, it came about an inch from my cheek. And if that thing had touched me, I might have had a heart attack and died on the spot. Okay? That's another thing. When I was a child, my father used to tease me. Teasing involved, I'm two, chasing me around, screaming and yelling with this weird spider with the springy legs, capturing me and sticking it in my underpants. We won't go into the implications of the imagery here. I developed a major, he did other little spider trips on me. I developed like a major spider freakout phobia. It turns out arachnophobia is hardwired into the human body. So is falling the cliff. Little babies, you put them on the edge of the table and they rarely roll off. It's actually built in. But I didn't just have normal. I had a hysterical level. I could walk in a room in the old days, before I put this up with sugar, coffee, and a few other things. Mm-hmm. I can actually stand there and watch a spider in my house and not freak out. I catch it in the glass and put it outside. I could even have one maybe walk on me, and if it was not too big, I wouldn't freak out. I used to be able to walk in a room, and if there was one anywhere, I would see it. So this thing, it was hysterical, but this little eye, you see, saw it, even though I was like, you know, not paying much attention. It was dim light. Nope, this little eye that's taking care of me saw that thing and grabbed my body. It's called an emotional hijacking. There's like this back door to the emotional brain, and sometimes we call it freaking out. Okay, it takes over, grabs the body and the mind, and does something. Like, throws me backwards before our nice rational self can get command again. Well, this is good and bad. It's good because when you're driving down the freeway at 75 miles an hour, or faster perhaps, and something starts coming at you, you can't sit there and go, oh, yes, I noticed that 18-wheeling Mack truck is coming over here towards me. It's, you know, and let's see, shall I go right or shall I go left? Shall I turn 12 degrees or 15 degrees? No. Somehow, instantaneously, before you even thought about it, you swerve, right?
Right.
You done that?
Yep.
That's that little safety mechanism. But that little safety mechanism, what it does is it notices anxiety and being stimulated by coffee or other stimulants like that. Being stimulated feels like anxiety to the body. We can only be anxious or relaxed. just like we can only stand or sit. And it picks up on that low-grade anxiety and goes, uh-oh, something's wrong. There's something bothering. There's something here. What is? And starts looking for the problem, and then it latches on to that miserable, rotten so-and-so last night who stood me up, or whatever, or, you know, whatever, all right? That we thought we had let go of. Now, it picks up on that again. It goes, you know, and then we're off into the races again.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's a flip side to all of this, too, and that some people, even though these are wonderful techniques that you have, then people could possibly use them to displace things that actually they really should be giving focus, they really should be giving a little worry time to.
Well, that's why it's the point is to say not to not worry. No, it's to worry smart because, yes, there are issues, and we need to deal with these. We need to worry them through.
So how do you worry something through?
Well, like I said, first of all, you go through the flexible thinking, which I said before, what are the facts, how do I feel, what works, what's possible, what could go wrong, what's the next step. Another thing that I didn't mention is, and challenge it and so on and so forth, is to imagine a happy ending.
Okay.
Or deliberately, because when we start worrying, whatever it is, we tend to take it to the ultimate extreme of what could possibly happen, the Chicken Little with the sky falling thing.
Right.
And those pictures, because we talk to ourselves and we get images in our mind, and both of these things trigger the body. They are messages to the body telling the body what's going on, because how else does the body know what's going on except from the data that's coming in through the senses and through the mind that's interpreting these things. So when we sit there and we picture horrific disasters, we freak out.
Mm-hmm.
So the point then is to start picturing a positive outcome, because in most cases, things work out okay. Or imagine a miracle, this type of thing. But yes, we want to worry things through, but we want to look at them in a nice, rational way and come up with, you know, the list here on this side of the page and the list on that side of the page and all of that, and come up with a plan. And then we got to stop this worry warning and soothe ourselves rather than just don't worry. That's just not going to, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing, one of my favorites is the underreactive statement.
Okay.
Keep saying underreactive statements to yourself.
Kind of hard for me to imagine you underreacting about anything. But okay.
No, I'm not overreacting. I'm enthusiastic.
That's, of course, my mistake again.
No, you didn't make a mistake. I'm just clarifying, okay? No, I am I don't want to say I'm a wild woman because I was talking about the wild lion, but enthusiastic.
Yes.
Okay.
You're delightful.
Oh, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Okay.
the underreactive statement.
I'm
now, here's
for a
one
visit.
Of my favorite ones.
What's
well,
that?
I'll tell you one that, of course, makes more sense first. Uh-huh. You're on the highway. You know how we had this propensity to start driving faster?
Yes.
And to get annoyed at this jerk who's trying to pass us and stuff like that? And that's how, you know, some people can't control that. I mean, you know, they're having automobile accidents. They're road rage. They're whipping out their pistol and shooting people, and it's just ridiculous, okay? We can all get caught up in this. I'm going down the road, and actually, I've perfected the technique of driving unconscious.
Good one.
It is true. I've got the eye watching. Don't forget that. Well, I'm unconscious.
Major faith going on here. Okay.
I beg your pardon?
Major faith. Faith going on here.
I drive to this place about 3 hours twice a month each way, and I get in the car and I arrive. I don't always remember the drive.
Okay.
We've all done this.
All right.
We drive
I'm
a
not
drive and
the...
we drive a drive. We don't remember the drive. I call that driving.
Okay. I'm not getting in a car with you.
Okay. Oh, no. My father was a jet pilot.
Okay.
He thought I should have been a jet pilot, too.
Okay. I'm still not getting in the car with you.
Yeah. No. Okay. I drive unconscious, and I've developed good habits.
Okay.
Like I never tailgate. Uh-huh. I automatically, without paying any attention, can always drop back many feet behind. I may be going fast, but I got a big space in front of me. Always.
All right.
Always. I had a boyfriend once who tailgated. I mean, I could not be in the car with this man. I'm like hysterical. I am out of my mind. And not only would he tailgate, but then he'd reach into the back seat and be rustling around, not even looking at the damn car, which I kid you not, I could read the small print of who manufactured that bumper sticker. Okay. And I am like dying. And in fact, one time I just said, that's it, you've got to pull over right now, let me out. And he did. And he took off and left me on the side of the road and went back to my apartment while I damn near, I mean, they might have found me buried somewhere 10 years later. I could tell you that story, but I won't. But I couldn't stand it. I drive unconscious, meaning I have just, thank God I have developed all of these good habits, and one of them is this business of constantly dropping back.
Okay.
Always, okay?
Right.
So anyway, one of my underreactive statements, when I start getting into that frenzy thing where I might start driving faster and trying to pass and zooming in this idiotic thing that'll get me there, 3 seconds sooner,
right.
I say to myself, I'm not in a hurry. I'm not in a hurry. And I slow right down. And another one, this is going to sound absurd. When I was younger and when I first started off, I had $110 a month. That was it. I had like the GI Bill. I was a war orphan. That insane jet pilot, well, they don't live long, okay? And he didn't. I got this thing, the war orphan. It was like the GI Bill. And that was my whole entire money. I paid my rent, my food, my books, my clothes, my everything with that. Every penny I ever had over $110, I have been rich. So, I didn't have much money. I get some huge bill. I'm freaking out, going berserk. Now I get a big bill. I do not like big bills. Who does, right? Unexpected big bill.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it and I go, it's only money. It seems absurd, but I have another tag. It's only money. It's not my arm.
Right.
And right now, about 2 years ago, I'm like the handy girl.
Okay.
I have rentals. I do all the work on them. I'm up on the roof. I'm on the ladder. I got the chainsaw doing this. I'm doing that. You know, I'm up on the ladder. I managed to fall off the ladder and in the process rip, and I want to underscore that word, rip off my finger.
Oh.
Yes. Actually, that wasn't the really severe. I also fractured my shoulder. And at this very minute, that finger's gone. I can feel it. It's tingling. It does weird things, that lost finger.
Phantom flim.
And I say to myself, it's only money. It's not my arm. Okay? It's not my finger.
Right.
This woman hit my car. Actually, a police officer caused it, but the poor woman who hit me ate it. And she was crying, and she was so upset. And I kept looking at her, holding up my hand, the finger, pointing at the finger, going, it's only a car.
Right.
It's not your arm. It's only a car.
I know, but the committee is saying, yeah, but I need the car for my work. And if I can't do my work, I can't pay my bills.
Exactly. Well, that's why you need to have another committee member saying, it's only a car. It's not your leg.
Yabba, yabba, yabba.
It's only a car. Yeah. It's not your leg.
Right.
You can rent another car.
Yep, very good.
So it's underreactive. Another one is worry words go, what if? What if the sky falls? What if I drive off that cliff? What if that truck hits me? What if my husband's sneaking around? What if? Just saying the word what if gets us going.
Yep.
The underreactive statement is, so what if?
Yeah.
Okay. See, what we're doing is we are manipulating this robot. We are conditioning. My doctorate that I got at Stanford was in, a lot of people think it's really obnoxious, behavior mod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Behavior engineering, whatever you want to call it. Only we learned there how to apply it to thoughts. They now call that cognitive psychology. You know, so I'm really, really into this thing of the being, let's grab those puppet strings of this thing we call self, not the inner self.
Right.
But this vehicle that we're going around in, you know, what if somebody gave you this wonderful Camaro? I have a Camaro. It's now smashed up by that poor woman. What if you got your little Camaro, your hot rod car, you got in there. You could get the thing going if you didn't know anything. You could get it going. You could get it going down the street, careening around. What if you didn't have a manual how to drive it? Well, it'd go careening all over the place. This would be a disaster, wouldn't it?
Yes, it's true. And you know what? It's a disaster that we don't have any more time.
Oh, dear.
It's unfortunate. You're so delightful. I love your sense of humor. And you really do make a lot of sense about this. So thanks for coming on the program.
Well, let me just say one last thing.
Yeah.
And that is, of course, my publisher would love it if everybody would just race out and buy the book.
Of course.
But
yeah.
I have tons of information on my website. People can go there and get it, and it's Doc, like D-O-C, Doc Potter, like Harry Potter, DocPotter.com. Tons of information.
Great. And we'll also have a link to your website on the Dynamic Health Radio website, which is dynamichealthradio.info, dynamichealthradio.info. Thank you again for joining me.
Well, thank you.
All right.
And you keep that committee under control. What you got to do is go out and get a few more committee members.
To
do the smart worry to deal with the ones who are, you know, the fuddy-duddies.
Yeah, I know. But they're all competing for my attention, so I don't know. I just learned to live with it. It's like feeling like a horse being drawn in 8 directions all at the same time. Somehow you just go, just balance it out, okay? Just balance out the tension. Nobody pull one harder than the rest. As long as you all pull the same amount, we're okay.
I love your Canadian accent.
Oh, thank you.
I have Canadian relatives.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again. We'll have to fly out of the studio here.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to the Dynamic Health Show on CFRO 102.7 FM. That's Co-op Radio. My name is Allard. I was speaking with Dr. Beverly Potter about her book, The Worrywart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. And as I mentioned, this interview will be posted on the Dynamic Health website with links to Beverly's website. And that website, again, is dynamichealthradio.info, dynamichealthradio.info. You can listen to that interview anytime. It'll be up later today. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back again next week.